Domestic violence takes place around the world, in every country, every culture, and at every socioeconomic level in society.
Today on Real Family Talk, we will discuss how we can keep our homes abuse-free during the COVID-19 pandemic and beyond. Join us. Domestic violence takes place around the world in every country, every culture, and at every socioeconomic level in society. Sadly, the stay-at-home orders intended to protect the public and prevent widespread infection might be creating a pandemic within a pandemic as victims of violence are left trapped with their abusers.
Today, we are joined by Dr. Katya Reinhardt, Associate Director of Health Ministries for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. She's also a nurse practitioner with extensive expertise in the area of domestic violence. Welcome, Katya.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be with you all.
Katya, help us with some definitions. We often use terms such as domestic violence, intimate partner violence, or IPV, and abuse interchangeably. What's the difference?
Well, that's a good question. In reality, domestic violence, really, it's the more broad definition that has to do with anyone that lives in a household that either has an intimate relationship, like married couple or children with parents. But it can also be, grandparents in the home or others living in the home. And in that environment, we see then that someone trying to intimidate the other, dominate, control in various ways. They could use physical ways to do that, sexual ways to do that, emotional, verbal abuse is a form of it. And intimate partner violence is more between an intimate couple, whether they're married or whether they are not necessarily married. So intimate partner violence can happen with people dating, not yet married. And it's more between someone who has an intimate relationship with the other one, usually in a marriage. But domestic violence covers many forms of abuse, child abuse, some of the other forms I mentioned within the home environment.
So in intimate partner violence, is there something that's happening there that makes it identify as violence? Yes, it's between two people who are intimate, a husband and a wife, but are there many things that could be happening that are under the scope of intimate partner violence?
Sure. There is, as I mentioned, intimidation that can take place verbally. That can be, sometimes people can just avoid and be silent and try to just coerce the other one by not communicating, right? There are many different forms of intimate partner violence, including sexual abuse that can happen as well when it's forced into, towards the other person. So there are many different ways that intimate partner violence can happen by different forms. People can stalk the other person, for instance. They can open their emails and not keep privacy, just, go inside and start to get information that does not belong, it's not within their boundaries, it's the other person's boundaries. So many times when you are actually not respecting the other person's individuality and you are using different behaviors to control, again, to dominate, to create fear in the other one so you can then be in control, that is all part of intimate partner violence.
Yeah, I think you used some very important words, coerce, control, disrespect, because a lot of the things that you mentioned, some viewers might be watching and saying, well, I'm okay if my husband reads my email or if my wife reads my email. Well, that's totally different if you're okay with it. It's a different
thing. Yeah, if you give permission, right?
Right. You've given them permission. You've discussed this. But if your spouse is consistently going into your email, stalking, or your boyfriend is stalking you, you know, checking up on you, all of these things, that might be under the umbrella of intimate partner violence, right?
Correct. Yeah. It all has to do, as you said, it's respect, respecting the boundaries that a particular relationship has. Some people are okay and say, oh, no, please. Yeah. You have all my passwords. Just go in. You know, you can access and do that. And that's a healthy thing. It can be a healthy
right.
thing. If it's agreeable.
If it's healthy.
If it's healthy, yeah. Well, but in some circumstances, when there's abuse and intimate partner violence, what we see is that there's one person in the relationship who actually pushes themselves into the other person's lives without respecting that individuality of the other person, and constantly accusing and you know, finding ways to be upset with that person, control that person. And that's the goal of that. You know, reading everything, listening to the messages, controlling who they're with, where they're going, you know, what they're going to do. So that is not unhealthy. And that's what falls under the intimate partner violence.
I would like to ask you about sexual harassment. Can you define sexual harassment and who is doing it and how is it being done?
So sexual harassment, it can happen between any two people. It doesn't have to be, of course, you know, usually it's outside of an intimate partner or a relationship. It can be in the work and school with anyone that you know. When there is sometimes a verbal or some kind of communication that comes, sexual communication, that it could be even sometimes a compliment in the side of one person thinking, oh, I'm just complimenting them. But when there is some sexual or, you know, related somehow to sexual nuance, and, you know, that makes the other person uncomfortable, that is sexual harassment. When somebody may make a proposal, you know, if you do this for me, you know, I will do that. Or, you know, you can have like at work, give benefits to someone who perhaps, you know, would fulfill some desires of that person in regards to sexuality. So, but just a verbal communication that has nuanced sexual ramifications can be, and making the other person uncomfortable can be in the realm of sexual harassment. So we have to be careful when we communicate with other people. And we are seeing more awareness of that now more than ever. You know, these last few years, we have seen a lot of awareness about how careful we must be with communication between the sexes, or even, you know, same sex relationships. Okay. Also,
right. And also for people to know their rights, that it's not
correct.
Appropriate for someone to say that to you, and to make these types of deals, if you will, if you do this, then I will do this for you. And especially in the workplace, I think it's important for people to understand what their rights are, that they don't have to accept that. But it's hard. It's difficult when you're in a job situation and you feel that your job is dependent on this. And so it's important for us, as you're saying, to not use words in a way that could intimidate and threaten people.
After a short break, we'll talk more with Dr. Katya about keeping our homes abuse-free. Stay with us.
One in four women and one in 10 men experience intimate partner violence, which is also called IPV. Violence can take various forms. It can be physical, emotional, sexual, or psychological. People of all races, cultures, genders, sexual orientations, socioeconomic classes, and religions experience IPV. Now, Katya, you gave us that overview of domestic violence and IPV. Speak to us a little bit about physical abuse, because that is the one that we most often hear about. So let's talk about that one right now.
Okay, yeah, sure. Certainly physical abuse is one that it's very easy to recognize because it leaves physical marks oftentimes. compared to, say, emotional abuse, where you can't see that so well. So physical abuse is when someone is using, again, trying to control, trying to intimidate someone, but by behaving in a physical way, hitting that person, pinching that person, doing a physical, hitting the person, doing a physical act that actually will bring fear, will bring a sense that that person is in control. And so the other one becomes a victim of that. So many times we see very commonly both men and women experiencing that from an intimate partner or from other people in the household. And we see physical scars oftentimes.
Right. Now, you said something very important, and you said pinching. And I know that we often hear parents say, you know, I just pinched my child and they got right back on track. What are your thoughts about that? Because I think sometimes parents who subscribe to the physical punishment or physical discipline perspective or philosophy might actually be abusing their child?
Well, I think certainly we have to be very careful. Culturally, there's a lot of different worldviews in regards to what is abuse and not, depending on the culture you come from. But the reality is the UN or the WHO definition of physical abuse really is when you're using that pinching in order to control and creating pain. Many times, without really talking, discussing the issue with the person, and those marks stay. So I personally come from a culture and an understanding in this field that there are ways to engage your child that do not require physical punishment, that are perhaps even more effective in helping that person, that child, understand what they did wrong and, what they should do, instead of leaving marks in their body, creating pain through pinching. So I think there are oftentimes pinching that can even take a skin off, really.
Absolutely.
And so that is definitely can be a form of abuse for sure.
And the truth is that oftentimes when we hit our children, it's done in anger. And we're out of control, and you're not able to really think clearly when you're out of control. So we often say to parents, what lesson are you trying to teach your child? Are you trying to teach them that you can control them, that you can hurt them?
That
you're bigger than they are? Or are you really trying to correct their behavior? So that might be a good guide for people as well.
Yeah. We think about violence in general, and the whole issue of abuse, it has a disproportionate impact on communities of color and other marginalized groups. Economic instability, unsafe housing, neighborhood violence, lack of safe and stable childcare, and social support can worsen already tenuous situations. What can we do during this COVID pandemic to mitigate these issues that have been magnified because people are in close quarters together?
Yeah, you brought up such an important thing, because indeed, because of COVID, now we are facing such a situation where many of these vulnerable groups, like you mentioned, there are minorities, there are women, certainly are much more at risk than men, actually, in many of the cases, children, even the elderly. So we need to be able during this time to specifically think about those vulnerable groups, because they are, in fact, being much more at risk because of their social circumstance. Maybe, they are being laid off. They are at home and facing a situation where they don't have the support that normally they would have, whether it is for children at school, to talk to someone at school. Whether for women, sometimes they can go out, go to shelters, go to talk to someone, that can help in a hotline. But now they're all in the same place and there's more control. The perpetrator has more control over. So I think we need, first as a society, we need to be aware and try to put in place lines of communication and make sure people know how to access them. But also, within the home, really try to raise awareness so that people who are in those situations are able to recognize ways that they can find help if they need to. But there, as a society, we also have to be able to provide, hopefully, financial support and help for people who are struggling, some of what the Absolutely. Government is trying to do, but really be able to somehow make resources accessible by these groups.
After a short break, we'll hear some more principles from Dr. Katya on how we can keep our homes abuse-free. Stay with us.
Before the break, we were speaking with Dr. Katya about keeping our homes abuse-free, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. So, Katya, continue telling us what people who find themselves in abusive home situations can do during this time, because we're saying that they're locked in and trapped with their abusers, which is, makes it even more difficult for them to access resources. So what advice would you have for people who find themselves in this situation?
Well, certainly one of the good things is that because this has become awareness has increased in this area that this is a problem, many agencies have done all they can to increase the ways that they can make themselves available for someone to access. So the person who is in a home needs to seek and can seek emotional and spiritual healing for what, you know, the wounds that they have suffered by connecting with their local hotlines, with local agencies in different ways, online, sometimes on the phone. There's apps that provide direct links, which the perpetrator won't have be able to track because he has unique ways that the person can access. So depending on the country in the world and the place where the person, the family lives, now agencies have made themselves, you know, recreated themselves to be more accessible. So I would first look out, try to find out what is available through your phone, through online, in an online way, if you cannot go in person, because in many places, people are still trying to be home or asked to be home. That's one of the things, but certainly knowing the signs of what they're going through and be able to try to access those resources is very important.
Tell us real quickly what some of those signs might be so that people know if they're actually going through this.
Yeah, certainly, as we mentioned, anything physical abuse, or in other words, if somebody is actually threatening or actually performing an act of physical abuse towards you, hitting you, or verbally, if they are intimidating you, trying to coerce you to do things at home, if they're acting jealously or possessively, you know, in your regard, controlling what you're going to do, who you're going to talk to, that's certainly a type of abuse. Or what we're seeing too also now for couples particularly, because they are homes, maybe the husband or wife lost their job, there's financial issues, they're there presently there. Sometimes we're seeing more sexual abuse within that as well. And that is, again, when somebody attempts to be constantly having sex with someone without their permission, even though they're married. So really forcing themselves on the other one. So these are all signs that this is not right. And so trying to reach out is very important to someone who can provide guidance, all the steps, you know, that they can. It's important to assess your level of safety as well, particularly also if there's children involved in the home.
Yes.
And again, some of these things I mentioned is not just to the intimate partner, but it can also be towards the children. Some of those behaviors. So assessing the safety level, there is an app actually available in many languages now that people can go to access how safe it is for me to stay in this home. Because we see oftentimes, unfortunately, that there are homicides, there are physical abuse that can come to a very tragic end.
Absolutely.
So evaluating safety is important.
Oh, that's excellent.
You know what? I just wanted to mention for those who are watching who might be thinking that we perhaps are just skewed to one side and the fact that men are also abused. And so I just wanted to say that we want to acknowledge the fact that men do experience abuse, although at much lower levels than children or women or what have you. But I do want to go on record as acknowledging that men are also abused. We want to also talk a little bit about the church and what the church is doing, Elaine, on the End It Now.
Yeah, well, I want to thank Dr. Katia for being with us today and for sharing this very important information. And what we can do is we can put on our website, on the Hope Channel, perhaps, with this show, we can put some of those apps that you've mentioned and some hotlines. And definitely at family.adventist.org, we can add this information. And we'll share your website as well. But the Seventh-day Adventist Church is committed to keeping our homes abuse-free. Find out more about the End It Now initiative and End It Now Sabbath every year as a way to educate your church and community. These are excellent materials that are prepared each year, which include sermons, children's stories, seminars, and more. And Dr. Katia mentioned it, that it really is about creating awareness as well, that we can do a lot just by creating this awareness in our communities, in our church, even in our homes.
The reality is domestic violence is a cancer that needs to be eradicated from every relationship and every family. If you're afraid because of what you're going through, be encouraged with the words found in the book of Matthew, chapter 10 and verse 31, that say, "Fear not, therefore you're of more value than many sparrows."
That's all for today's Real Family Talk. Join us again when we'll share more about strengthening families and inspiring hope. See you next time.